really sorry I was away again. Oh, that's okay. You had to leave during inventory. I've been feeling down for weeks. Oh? Oh, get over it. We all have our problems. I need a break. I'm glad you came to me.
That was a commercial for Bell Let's Talk. And that's the time that we find ourselves in right now, Bell Let's Talk. It's a campaign that Bell puts on to raise awareness towards mental health. And it took special and significant meaning to me after the death of a paramedic that I worked with and knew pretty well over the years. Greg Turner, paramedic Greg Turner from Edmonton, died by way of suicide in the back of an ambulance in 2015. And that was sort of the day for me mentally that I started challenging my core belief on calling suicide selfish, or using the terminology committed suicide. And it was, being a paramedic, I've been to a lot of suicides, I've seen a lot of suicides, and I've read a lot of suicide notes. Suicide is one of the calls that sort of permeates and pervades EMS, repetitively. And it's a tough, for me anyway, it's a tough call. I hated suicides. Not only for back then when I thought it was selfish, but because they were difficult. They were hard to deal with. They're really sad. And I think that's why I found it easier to become angry at them and label them as things such as selfish and to become or try to be desensitized to it, because I was going to them with such staccato that I almost had to build up this barrier, this callous shell. And drain my empathy bucket in order to make it to the next call. But in 2015, after I got the phone call that Greg was dead, the terms selfish and committed and weak, and just those words didn't fit the narrative for me anymore. And it was at that point in my life that I started really kind of looking at suicide in a different light. And that was really difficult for me back then because I was pretty sick back then. I was drinking heavily and having terrible nightmares. And I was not in therapy at the time. I did not have my diagnosis. I wasn't seeking help. I was falling rather precipitously down the rabbit hole. And, that was a bad place for me to be back then. So it was tough for me to really dissect and reframe and reshape how I looked at suicide, because as I tried to reshape and rethink of suicide, I found myself just in more pain because I was now reliving and re-experiencing all these other suicide calls that I'd been to as a paramedic. And now they were all rested atop of the backdrop of Greg Turner, a guy that I thought was, as strong as an ox. And he was. He was strong as an ox, and then to find out that he's not here anymore because of this silent killer suicide, it was completely mind shattering. I didn't know where to put the pieces back. I didn't know how to start thinking about it, and so I chose just to drink it away. I chose just to stay in the angry frame of mind and drink it away. And it was hard for quite some time because I never really allowed myself to feel it. And B, it's a strange thing being a country width away from all your brothers and sisters that you just finished working with, and then being in the bar trying to drown your sorrows, and then you see pictures of Greg pop up on TV, and I'm the only one in the bar that knows who he is. I'm the only one in the bar who cares that this is on the TV right now. I think I remember I was really drunk one night, and I think I was trying to tell some guy at the bar the story of Greg. talking to me on the bench, which I get into in this read. But I think I was trying to talk to them and tell them about that incident, but I was really drunk and so pretty sensitive towards what I deemed disrespect. So when they turned their backs and started talking to one another because they were together, they weren't with me, I took that as disrespect, and I got myself into a little bit of trouble. You know, subsequently left the bar. I wasn't kicked out of the bar, but I left the bar probably at a good time. And then of course, and you know, earth shatteringly, but 2 years later, you know, the death of my mom, you know, by way of suicide. And that was, well, I mean, that was a whole other situation to face. But once again, I found myself having to confront the notion that suicide is selfish and the notion that, you know, it happens to weak people, because both my mom and Greg are the strongest people I think that I've had the privilege of knowing. And it just didn't fit the mold for me. It didn't fit that narrative that, is promulgated throughout society. And, it wasn't until I was sober that I was actually really able to sort of decide for myself that I don't believe suicide is selfish. I don't believe suicide is a sign of weakness. And I don't believe that people commit suicide because they are selfish and weak. I just don't believe that's the case at all anymore. And I'm not out here to tell you to change your mind and the way you think and view things. I'm merely here to tell you a story of a great man. And I'm here to do it on Bell Let's Talk Day, because it's imperative that we talk. And that is one thing that I've learned from both Greg and my mom. And that is one thing that I vow to continue doing. I will talk. I will always talk. I refuse to live in silence. I refuse to mute myself. And I absolutely refuse to allow the negative thoughts and those pernicious demons to put duct tape over my mouth. I refuse. I will yell. I will scream. I will lament. I will always talk. And I'm talking now, and I will continue to talk. And I am really, really humbled and beyond grateful that you're choosing to listen. So coming up next, I have a story here called Okay, Let's Talk. And I wrote this a couple of nights ago. Couldn't sleep. I was thinking about... thinking about Greg. I was thinking about, I mean, the day's coming up really soon when I wrote it. It was a few days ago. So Bell Let's Talk was on the forefront of my mind. And I sat down and started writing, and this story came out. So I'm going to tell you about Greg, kind of tell you about the guy that he was, the medic that he was. And I'm doing so in hopes that it will promote some dialogue, and that we can continue talking to one another, and that we can all come together and break the stigma. Again, the little snippet that you heard at the beginning of this, the little commercial there, it was a commercial that aired on TV, and I really liked it, because it basically, it's two women talking in an office, and, the one woman is broken down and said, listen, I need help. I'm not in a good place. And the other person, says the right things. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. And then inwardly her introspection is very negative and very judgmental until the very end, when there's that switch where she says, you know what, I'm actually really glad you came to talk to me. And then the Bell Let's Talk logo comes up on the screen. And I think it's an incredible movement that they're a part of. And I know that sometimes it gets sort of dismissed just because of the corporate nature of this thing. But you know, even corporate, companies can have good business ideas and good-hearted intentions. I should say not business ideas, but good-hearted intentions. And something like this is really near and dear to my heart. It's something that is very, very close to me, and I am beyond grateful that there is a corporate company out there doing something like this. So I'm going to read this story for you now. It's called Okay, Let's Talk. And I just want to, before I get started, I want to say, if you do need to talk to somebody, Before you do anything that is irreversible, please just reach out. There are numbers out there. If you type it into Google, if you just type in suicide hotline or help hotline, numbers will come up. There is always another way. There's always something else that you can do, even if you just phone a friend in the moment or phone the police, call 911. They will help you. There's always another way. I promise you there is. There is always another day and a new time, and it doesn't always hurt as bad as it does in these moments. So please, please, please talk to someone. To be a paramedic is a special thing. It is unique in that it is unlike any other profession or duty. Paramedics are not police officers, yet our hands hold the savagely depraved. We are not firefighters, yet we inhale smoke whilst knelt beside a burning man. We are not priests, though I have heard the last confessions of a dying soul. We are not social workers, but for certain our eyes have captured the horrid sight of a badly beaten child. Did you know that an injured soldier's second most audible plea on the battlefield is for that of a medic, followed only by that of screams for their mothers? We may not be your father nor mother, but make no mistake, we hear you. To be a paramedic is a calling. To be a good paramedic, however, means having your bones held together by virtue, not sinew. I knew one such man. I worked with him. I have seen with my own eyes the heavenly skill that emanated from his well-trained hands and studious mind. I have seen him bring the dead back to life. I have observed as he spoke kindly, softly, and empathically to those in need. When I was first told by my PO, petty officer, that I was going to be riding out with Edmonton paramedics as part of my pre-deployment and maintenance of clinical skills upkeep, I was excited to get back on the ambulance. My first time since practicum. The night of my first rideout, I had no idea who I was supposed to be meeting with, so I stood in the kitchen area of the ambulance station in the city's north end, awkwardly shifting my stance from side to side as a bevy of paramedics came in and out of the building for shift change. And then he came, a tall and sturdy man with a commanding presence but an obvious kindness that followed in behind him.
Matthew?
Yes, sir.
No. Greg. Call me Greg.
Sure, yeah, Greg. He extended his hand to meet mine. Though his shake was firm and authoritative, it was not at all intimidating. I was to shadow Greg over the next several days and nights. I didn't know it then, but there was no one better. Greg took me to the back of the rig and showed me around the ambulance, giving me a tour of their equipment and supplies, asking me how much of it was within use in the military where I was currently serving. It was all there. Greg seemed pleased with my eagerness and humility to learn. We got along well, which was good because he could have crushed me. That was my introduction to Greg, shadowing him for those short days and long nights. When I left the Army, I was fortunate enough to be hired on by the Edmonton Paramedic Service, later to be known as Alberta Health Services. I would once again encounter that large, kind man. He seemed larger than life to me. His voice carried a deep baritone that was soothing to those who knew him and caused immediate attention to those who did not. I got to know Greg over the years. We even worked a few special duties together, one football game in particular. I remember because it was a great time. As the years passed and my seniority gathered weight, I would eventually find myself stationed at that same North Ambulance House where I had met Greg some years before. We even worked on the same truck, albeit on different platoons. Basically, he was on nights when we were on days, and vice versa. On numerous occasions, we would exchange pleasantries and guffaws while stood in the oil-stained ambulance bay. We became Facebook friends, no longer just colleagues passing one another ephemerally at shift change. When that day came, the day where I responded to that bad thing, that really bad thing, Greg was there to hear me out before I went home. I sat on a bench outside of the station, and he forewent his responsibility of signing on, merely to make sure that I was indeed okay. I will always remember his kindness that day, because I wasn't okay, even though I said I was. The fickle permanence of the internet is one that makes memories tangible and gives time the ability of physical recall. As such, I am able to read Greg's last words to me. I will not provide the detail. Those are not yours to have. They're mine. What I will say is that I tried to return the favor and kindness that he had gifted to me on that bench a year or so prior. It was now he whom had been to a bad thing. A really bad thing. As such, his heart hurt. At least, that's what his words tell me. I told him to stay positive and offered up my company anytime he wanted to go for a beer and try and set the world right. He thanked me, and then I never spoke to him again about it. Fast forward to January 26, 2015. I was living in Ontario now. I was hungover on that cold January morning. I often was back then. My phone rang. I spoke through remnants of stale beer and whiskey breath to whomever was calling me. It was Rob, a friend of mine, a brother. He was sullen in tone and asked where I was and if I was alone. I knew something was wrong. I could hear it in the silence between spoken words.
Maddie, you knew Greg, yeah? Turner? Yeah, man, I know him. Great guy. Why? Shit. They found him dead this morning. He's dead, Maddie. Wait, what? Greg is? No. Yeah, they worked him at the station, but...
On January 26th of 2015, paramedic Greg Turner was murdered by his own mind. Greg was killed by suicide in between calls. Greg was found in the back of an ambulance that rested in the same oil-stained bay where laughs and stories were shared. I wasn't hungover anymore. I mean, I was, but I didn't feel it. I felt thirsty, though, ravenous for a cure to the pain that had been introduced to me. So I got dressed, walked out of my apartment and into the frigid air of winter's unforgiving wind. I sloshed through the snow, slipping and sliding towards the nearest bar. I pushed on the rusted down door, made of wood and steel, walked into the bleak, drab establishment, removed my coat and took up residency at the bar. I ordered a beer and a whiskey. I asked for them to be on repeat until satiated. I'm not sure what time that was, but the light of day was gone. And so was Greg. Over the next few days, TV screens and social media feeds were apathetically boastful with their images of Greg and the words, dead. I read and watched them all through the distorted gape of intoxication. I found myself opening his message that he had sent me about a year before. The message about the bad thing. I read my response and I felt lazy in my attempt at comfort. All I read now was, failure. Loser. Idiot. He's dead. You're to blame. It should be you. It should be you. You should be dead. Not them. Not him. No matter how much I drank, the voice of regret and self-doubt sang louder and louder. A lullaby before passing out. Not at all a euphonious one. Greg's wife became an advocate for speaking out. She challenged the current protection and help for first responders. Greg was the one who made Bell Let's Talk real for me. Painfully so. You see, I would love to talk. Talk to him. To Greg. But I can't. It's too late for all that. Sometimes I still blame myself for the diminutive message I sent him on that day. Logic brain knows that it's not my fault. I wasn't even in the same city as he was at the time. But the thing about suicide is, it doesn't care about logic nor topography. It does not discriminate. But it is a fucking thief. Ever since that day, I have remembered two things. One, the time I spent with Greg on that bench in front of Kildare Station, and the kindness and willingness to talk that he had gifted me. And two, the day I was told he was dead, and the way in which he had died. Those two things act as kindling in the fire of motivation towards spreading the flame of awareness for me. Greg was a good man, a healer, a helper. Greg was a friend, a brother. And in death, Greg shows us all the true importance of talk. On Bell Let's Talk Day, I will, I am, I continue. Sometimes I like to think that maybe Greg found my mom along the way, made her trip a little easier. I like to think that because I saw how great he was at calming the chaos of fear within the sick and wounded. Hey, Greg, if you see my mom, tell her it's all right. It's going to be okay. I'm talking.